And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Thursday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, we are one step closer to a Braves-Astros World Series. A big response from the Atlanta Braves last night. Plus, Appalachian State gets the big win against Coastal. Could Deshaun Watson be on the move over the next week? Has Saturday become the biggest game of Clemson's season? Plus, which city would Zion Williamson be best in? A couple of jobs may be on the line tonight for Thursday Night Football. We'll get ready for that. Paul Charchian will join us around 1:25, as always, to talk fantasy football and to preview this weekend in the NFL. Lee Sterling will join us at 2 to give us his football picks of the weekend. And we got our wrestling wrap-up as well, with a whole lot more over the next few hours to get to. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can also find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With it till 3 on this Thursday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? I'm going to do a bit of gloating.
Oh, yeah?
Because remember yesterday we were talking about Coastal Knapp State.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't pick which team would win, but I would say it would be by less than 5, which Coastal is favored by 5.
Yep.
App State won 30-27.
It's true. You did get that correct.
That's right. So, along with the wrestling wrap-up.
Yes.
WWE's Crown Jewel is now taking place in Saudi Arabia.
How about that?
Yep.
And
we already have a result coming in.
Okay, well, hold on. We have in the system for today, for this very reason, we have Ric Flair's woo for whenever we're going to get an update, because I know everyone's driving around today. They're so concerned about what's going on at the Crown Jewel. So just like we have our update, our breaking news music, we have our Ric Flair woo for any time you want to give a Crown Jewel update. Oh, yeah. You're going to get tired of this by the end of the day, I'm sure. Yeah, keep going, Rick. It's the Woo train. I could have kept that going even longer. All right,
Bobby's going to love it.
Yes.
Yeah. So far, the Usos defeated Cedric Alexander and Bobby's fellow Orangeburg native Shelton Benjamin.
Ah.
So in the kickoff match.
How about that? They're off and rolling.
And later on today.
Yeah.
Okay, former Furman University student Xavier Woods will be facing Finn Balor in the finals of the King of the Ring tournament.
Oh.
And former University of South Carolina track athlete Bianca Belair, which I think her real last name is just Blair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she is going to be she's going to be in the SmackDown Women's Championship triple threat match.
Oh, so much going on. Now, did that start at noon Eastern time?
Yes, it did.
Oh, and we already got one match over. That's a poor performance then.
Well, that was the kickoff match.
Oh, okay. So before, was that before noon then?
Right. What they call a dark match. They do a match, make sure all the equipment's working and things like that. So.
All right, I got you. All right, so we may have a distracted producer today with this going on while we're on air. You'll be hearing Ric Flair woo throughout the afternoon with all the updates you need, because I know as you drive around today, the biggest concern for you this afternoon is what is going on in Saudi Arabia with the WWE. So we got you covered. All right, let me start with this. The Braves got a huge win last night. and they're one game away from getting back to the World Series for the first time in 22 years. Now, you don't want to buy your World Series tickets just yet. The Dodgers did have the second-best record in baseball. They have won six straight elimination games, including three against the Braves a year ago. And you can think back to that series a year ago in which the Braves were in this very position, where Atlanta was up 2-0, lost a tough game in Game 3, came back, won Game 4, and then didn't win again the rest of the series. So, for the Braves, all right, don't count your chickens before they hatch. They're in a great spot. They should close out this series, probably tonight. But we've been here before. You can't get too excited because you were probably feeling the same way a year ago when the Braves were up 3-1, and yet they didn't advance. Now, this is a better Braves team today than it was a year ago, but you could also make the case that the Dodgers are better this year than they were at that point a year ago, even though they went on to go win the World Series. And for the Dodgers, you see a little bit of this is not to make any sort of excuse because the Braves have been the better team. The Braves have outplayed them. The Braves should be up 3-1. In fact, you can make a great case that this series should be over and the Braves should have swept them. But I think part of the issue for the Dodgers is that they are a little worn down. A year ago, they did go all the way to the World Series. They played more games than all but one other team. And then you had just a little bit of a shortened offseason, and you come back, and now you have to play a full season this year. It was my concern into this year. It's why we've seen a lot of injuries in baseball this year, because these pitching staffs only had to account for 60 games last year. Now suddenly you have to account for 162. That's taxing one year to the next. On top of it, the Dodgers had a long postseason run, and then you have the celebration. Even during a pandemic, you still have the different celebrations afterwards and the get-togethers and the ceremonies and, you know, the rings and this and that, and you don't have your full offseason. Or even if you do, you spend half of it, right, still celebrating what you accomplished instead of getting ready for the next year. We've done on the show before, I've given you all the numbers about the teams, the World Series hangover in Major League Baseball. There's a reason why we haven't had a champion repeat in 20 years. And if you go back and you look, the teams the following year usually get off to slow starts, right the ship a little bit in the second half, but still have disappointing years. Now, the Dodgers obviously had a great year, but maybe now it's finally catching up to them. Whether it was the extended time playing last year or a little bit of a shorter offseason and or the toughest division race we've seen in quite some time, battling with the Giants, where they had to win 106 games and it still wasn't enough. Then you go to the playoffs. You have to play a wild card game. Then you go against the Giants, the best team in baseball, take them to the final pitch of the series. That series went as long as it could. And now you get the Braves here in the NLCS, where this year there's actual travel involved in the playoffs where there wasn't a year ago. And so you take on St. Louis, and then you have your series at the Giants, and then you have to go to Atlanta, and you come back home with the Braves and this and that, and it's a long season after a shorter season a year ago, and you won the World Series, and you look at this pitching staff. Julio Urias has worn down a bit. I think we saw that last night. Max Scherzer said he had a dead arm. Trevor Bauer had his own issues that were separate, but the Dodgers certainly missing him. Clayton Kershaw has worn down. He's unavailable. They could certainly use him tonight. And the Dodgers seem to be a little beat up. Now, tonight, the Dodgers have to rely on a bullpen game. And I shared my thoughts on the show yesterday. I hate these bullpen games. I would much prefer you give the ball to an ace. He goes out there, and he pitches for you. Right now, I'm a Red Sox fan. Chris Sale pitched well yesterday, left him in a batter too long in the sixth inning, but he's your ace. You needed that game. He did his job. He was the only one, but that's what I like to see. Now, the Braves won last night with a bullpen game. I understand that. Drew Smyly pitched really well, but I prefer giving the ball to one ace. That's the reason why he's there, why you're paying him. He wants that moment. He wants to put the team on his back, and he goes out there and pitches well instead of relying on matchups and seven different pitchers and hoping they all have it. The Dodgers, with their season on the line, will rely on a bullpen game tonight. Saving Scherzer. Buehler just pitched. Kershaw's unavailable. So, too, is Trevor Bauer. $300 million can't get you what it once could in baseball, apparently. Biggest game of the season, they don't have that ace, that star to rely upon and have to rely on a bullpen game to move forward. Now, the Braves are in a great position because you have this bullpen matchup tonight against Max Fried. You have your guy on the mound. The Dodgers don't, but you do. You have your star. And then, even after tonight, if the series extends, well, then you head home for the next two. So for the Braves, you have your ace on the mound, and then your fallback option, plan B, is heading back home with two games at home, needing to just win one. Atlanta is in a perfect spot. And they've gotten here with guys stepping up. We saw it again last night in Eddie Rosario. First ever player in postseason history to hit two homers, a triple, and a single in the same game. No one's ever done that before. He did it last night. And in the process, became just the second player ever in postseason history to have multiple four-hit games in the same series. That's what you need. We talk about this with championship teams in all sports every year, that while you have your stars, the teams that usually win the championships are the ones that have those role players step up. Maybe play over their heads a little bit in the big moments, come up with the big hits. Usually, you know, teams will game plan against the star player. That's why you need somebody else to make the big play. That's why Steve Kerr is able to knock down the shot. You're double-teaming Michael Jordan. He swings it over to Kerr or John Paxson or whoever, Ray Allen in recent years, and they knock it down. And it's been guys like Eddie Rosario and Jock Peterson and last night Drew Smyly coming out of the bullpen. The role players stepping up. Freddie Freeman didn't do much the first couple of games of the series. They still had a lead. Right? They were still up 2-0 without a single hit from their MVP because other guys are doing their part. And that's the mark of a good team, that you can rely on the role players, that you can be 26 guys deep in the case of a baseball team, that everybody is pulling their weight, and then some. Right? Everyone's doing their job. That is a tough team to beat. When now you have to worry about Eddie Rosario batting 500 in the playoffs, and the Braves are playing like a good team ever since the trade deadline. The Giants deserve a lot of credit for what they accomplished this year, but Alex Anthopoulos may be even more impressive because they did it on the fly midseason, and now, depending on what happens in the series, should get them to a World Series because of their moves. Without the moves they made at the trade deadline, the Braves wouldn't be here right now. Because of the trades made and the players they brought in, they should be in the World Series this season. They should win the NL pennant. The Giants had a great year. They lost in the first round of the playoffs. And that was an off-season plan coming together. Not to take anything away from the Giants, it was a remarkable job. They won almost 30 more games than they were projected to, which is very hard to do in baseball. Very impressive, incredible season for the Giants, best record in baseball, but they couldn't get past the Dodgers. For the Braves, I know they won the division last year. There was plenty of talent on the roster, but at midseason, they were under 500. They were in third place. They made moves to save the season, turn things around, and now get them within a game of the World Series. The Braves have gone 42-21 in the last 63 games. They've won two-thirds of their games. More recently, they've gone 18-5 in their last 23 games. They haven't lost back-to-back games in over a month. And that was the biggest thing last night, which I'll get to in just a second. But not only have the Braves played so well, but they've done it again without their best pitcher, without their best hitter, and without their best addition from last year's team. And after making those moves at the trade deadline, they've gotten this much better. Now, as I said, the most impressive part was the fact that the Braves did bounce back, that they still haven't lost back-to-back games in over a month, which helps you feel a little bit better about their situation, that even if they lose tonight, you trust they'll bounce back in Game 6 as well. And that's another good test of a champion or a good team. Can you put last night behind you and move forward? The Braves showed a lot of toughness last night. You cough up that game when you could have taken a commanding 3-0 lead, and maybe you're thinking, oh, here we go again, just like last year. And you cough up that game, and now you have to go back and play at Dodger Stadium once again, a place where you've lost the last 8 games in that stadium. It'd be easy to let one loss turn into 2. We talk about it all the time in football. You get beat up 1 week, you come back, you have another poor performance the following week, you let a loss turn into 2. It's a tough job for the coaches. In fact, last night, the Citadel Coaches Show, we were talking about exactly that with Coach Brent Thompson. Because Saturday against Furman was such a tough game for the Bulldogs where they kept shooting themselves in the foot, and there were some bad calls against the Citadel, and they had some costly turnovers. How do you keep getting up off the mat and responding, right, and not losing track of what's going on, focusing on the next play instead of worrying about what has happened? How are you able to put that behind you, go out there, and just play your game? And as Coach Thompson said last night, that's probably the toughest part about being a coach, is making sure the guys, right, focus on the next play. Forget about everything that's happened, the turnovers, the bad calls, the bad breaks. Things aren't going our way, whatever. Let's go out there and execute like we're supposed to on the next play. And then the one after that, and the one after that, and forget about everything that's happened or the things that have gone against us, which is what the Braves were able to do. They suffer a back-breaking loss in Game 3. They come back the next night, play even better. Put that game away early. Dodgers didn't have much of a chance last night. Didn't mount much of a fight. Much like my Red Sox in the ALCS, where Chris Sale was the only one last night that came ready to play for Boston. They had errors in the field. They had not much offense whatsoever. The bullpen was terrible. After Chris Sale came out, he gave them everything he had. Coming off Tommy John surgery, he made his best outing in 2 years. Chris Sale was ready to compete. The rest of the team wasn't. And I think you can make a strong case that that was a bit of a hangover from the night before. Boston thought they had strike three in the top of the ninth the previous night to send that game tied to the bottom of the ninth. They did not get the call. Two pitches later, the Astros took the lead, and then the wheels came off. The Red Sox still had a chance. They were down one in the ninth inning. They went to the bullpen, and the Astros scored six more runs in that ninth inning. And then the Astros came out the next day, and eventually, as the game wore on, buried the Red Sox and scored 13 unanswered runs over a two-night stretch. I don't know if the Red Sox were able to recover from that tough loss at home where they thought we're going to go up 3-1. We've been playing well. We've blown them out the last two games. We're leading here, going to the eighth inning. They give up the home run to Altuve in the eighth, get the bad call in the ninth. The wheels come off, and it followed into the next day. Plus, they played the earlier game yesterday, so you get right back out there even quicker. You play the next game 17 hours later. You just had the tough loss the night before. And that was a disappointing performance for the Red Sox to come back like that. And they looked like they were already, you know, they were still defeated from the night before. For the Braves, they could have had the same response. They've struggled in that stadium. They blew a 3-1 lead last year to the Dodgers. They had that heartbreaking loss the night before. They came out, played even better against another one of the Dodgers star pitchers. That was an impressive win and bounce back for the Braves. A sign of a good, tough team. Credit to the manager, Brian Snicker, getting those guys ready to go. Credit to the players for going out there, forgetting about the night before, and playing like they did. As I said many times on the show yesterday, momentum is only as good as the next day's starting pitcher. The Astros starting pitcher was fantastic last night. Pitched the best game of his career. They won. The Dodgers starting pitcher last night, not good enough. The Braves didn't really have a starting pitcher. They went with a bullpen game. So, point being, their momentum's only as good as the next night's pitchers in the case of the Braves, and Drew Smyly was pretty good. Big response from Smyly in the bats. Big response from the Astros. The Red Sox couldn't respond. And I think Boston let one bad call beat them twice, whereas the Braves did not let that backbreaker beat them last night. Now they have a commanding 3-1 lead. Here was Freddie Freeman talking after the game about those role players stepping up for the Braves to get them now one game away from the World Series.
And we have talked throughout, I feel like the last couple weeks, about kind of the unexpected heroes of postseason wins. How big tonight was 10 outs from Drew Smyly, maybe 6 outs from A.J. Minter?
That is huge. Bullpen games are extremely hard to navigate. And when you have your plans get thrown through a wrench right before the game pretty much starts today with Ynoa getting hurt, that's another obstacle we had to overcome, just added to our list this year. And what Drew did and A.J. did, it actually gave us, and we scored enough runs to give Luke Jackson a dine off, too. I mean, those guys are pitching every game, and that was huge for us to be able to give him a day off. And, man, what they did today, that's absolutely humongous with Max going tomorrow.
Right, to set you guys up for the rest of this series, which, speaking of, one win away from possibly heading to the World Series. Freddie, what's it going to take to get the job done?
That sounds really nice when you say that.
Nice.
Just a big game out of Max and keep going as an offense. We've been playing really good baseball for 2.5 months now, and we've been doing it all postseason long. We've been playing really good baseball, and hopefully we can continue to do that tomorrow.
Thank you, Freddie. We appreciate it. Congrats. Go enjoy it.
Thank you.
Freddie Freeman, after the win last night, he touched on those two things I mentioned that make up good teams. Guys step up that you don't know are going to, right? The Dodgers aren't game planning for Eddie Rosario. He becomes the hero. And number two, handling that adversity. The Tampa Bay Rays had the most wins in the AL. They won one playoff game, got knocked out in the first round. The Giants, most wins in all of baseball, didn't win a playoff series, got knocked out in the first round. And now the Dodgers, second most wins in baseball, on the brink of elimination. Meanwhile, you know, the Red Sox went through quite a bit this year. Low expectations. People were doubting them. A lot of COVID. They're probably going to have their season end on Friday, but they got this far. The Astros, everybody doubted them with the cheating, this and that. It's them against the world. They're one win away from going to the World Series. And the Atlanta Braves have had all sorts of speed bumps to get over this year. Only the 12th most wins in baseball. Everybody doubting them. And here they are, one win away from the World Series as well. They're in a great spot. Their ace is going tonight. And if that fails, they have two at home just to win one. The Braves should punch their ticket to the World Series for the first time in 22 years, sometime around midnight tonight. And I hope they do. Coming up, Appalachian State got that big win against Coastal Carolina last night. We'll hear how it sounded. Also, is this suddenly the biggest game of the season for Clemson, Saturday against Pittsburgh? We'll get to that. It's the Maher Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
What's today? It's Thursday.
Really?
feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Well, I got a girl with a record machine. When it comes to rocking, she's a queen. We love to dance on a Saturday night. All alone where I can hold her tight. But she lives on the 20th floor of town. The elevator's broken down, so I walk one, flight three, flight four, five, six, seven, flight eight, flight more.
It's Saturday now, the most important game on Clemson's schedule this year. And how many points will it take from their offense to win? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Don't forget to get your picks in. Our weekly pick'em contest continues all football season long. You have till 5 p.m. Friday, the end of tomorrow, to get your picks in. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, make your picks today, and the winner will get themselves a Fan Zone gift card. I guess there were some issues with the pick'em. I don't know. I saw Bobby talking about it. I have no idea, but it's all sorted out. So that's the good news. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Make your picks by the end of tomorrow and have a chance to win a Fan Zone gift card. Joe gets like half credit. He said it'd be a close game, maybe overtime last night, Appalachian State, Coastal Carolina. Thought it'd be fewer than 5 points. It was. It was a last-second field goal in under 30 seconds. But
I did not pick,
didn't pick
which
a winner.
Team would win.
Yeah, so, right. You know, that's a little bit of a cop-out.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a weird game for me.
Because
wanted to go to App State when I was coming up.
Oh, really?
And I did freshman year at what was then USC Coastal Carolina.
Uh-huh.
So
interesting.
It's kind of a, you know, strange game for me.
What was it about Appalachian State that you wanted to go?
I just visited that area and stuff like that and said, hey, this is a cool area. And it's, of course, App State is, you know, known for its academics as well.
Oh.
You know, so, you know, you get a degree from there. Hey, it's pretty good. But ended up at the College of Charleston.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and as both of them, you know, great academic schools.
Well, there you go. I've never been, but I've heard from multiple people about how nice it is in Boone, North Carolina, where Appalachian State is and the campus and everything. I've never actually been there yet. I'm trying to think. I think a team I've worked for, I think we've played against Appalachian State, just not at their place. I've never been. I think Citadel football has them on the schedule for the future, I think, in the next couple of years. So
they used to be in the Southern Conference.
That's true, yeah.
Right. And, of course, they were still in the SoCon when they upset Michigan.
Right.
All those years ago.
That's true.
And so, but now, and actually when they went to FBS, they didn't really go to FBS. They went back to FBS because up until, I think, about 82-83 time frame is when the entire Southern Conference dropped down to what was then Division I AA, which is now FCS.
Right.
So they used to be what we now call a Group of Five conference.
Yeah, that's true. And the Citadel will play there next September. So there we go. So I will get to go see Appalachian State fairly soon. Let's hear how it sounded last night. This was the Appalachian State radio call of that last-second field goal, pretty much last second. It was with about 21 seconds left. The field goal that gave them the upset win over a ranked Coastal Carolina team last night.
It'll be about a 25-yard attempt.
They can't ice him.
Nope, no timeouts left. Kicking from left to right with 3 seconds left. Chandler Staton, super senior from Gainesville, Georgia, to win the game. Snap back, ball down. Staton puts it in the air. Got it! Got it! Got it! App State wins! They are still the beast of the East! 30-27! The Mountaineers beat Coastal tonight!
That's how it sounded on Appalachian State radio. I'm actually glad they won in hindsight because I gotta be honest, with the post-game celebrations, and then Chase Bryce posted a screenshot about one of the Coastal's linebackers, one of the guys that has the blonde mullet, slid into his DMs like a few months ago to talk trash already to him. I mean, come on. All right. Appalachian State's one of the, or I should say Coastal Carolina's one of those programs. They've had a lot of success the last couple of years. But I'm more for like the subtlety, the people that just go about their business and expect to win, not the loudmouths talking trash, cutting up stuffed animals of the mascot of the team they face after beating them in the locker room. Like, enough of that noise. I know there's a lot of that in college football. I prefer, hey, we won a game. That's what we were supposed to do. Right, win with some class, move forward. So I was glad, in hindsight, that Appalachian State won last night. And it was an upset. They won at home, all that stuff. Good win for them. Coastal Carolina loses. Now, here's how it sounded. Poor guys, here's how it sounded on the Appalachian State student radio call last night of that game-winning field goal.
App State looking for their first ever win against a ranked opponent. The kick is up.
He got it.
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 Yeah, that's how it sounded. That's not your radio. That was on their end last night. That's what happened. For some reason, it started skipping and freezing on the student radio side.
Yeah, it sounds like a record that was,
that's right,
been scratched.
Yeah. So, unfortunately. I think they meant to say first win against a ranked team since moving to FBS football. Because, of course, how could you forget that they beat Michigan 14 years ago? Now, that was the last time they beat a ranked team prior to last night. Appalachian State had been 14 years, which I found surprising. And those college students were very young when they did beat Michigan, but I think they meant to say first win since, moving to an FBS conference against a ranked team, which it was last night for Appalachian State. Speaking of weird things, we started the show by talking about the Braves' victory last night. Now, we carry the Braves on our sister station. We are an affiliate of the Atlanta Braves Radio Network. Maybe you were listening over there. I don't think we carried it here on ESPN as well last night. I don't know. Maybe we had it on both stations. But, of course, ESPN Radio also broadcasts all of the playoff games. If you were listening to the Braves game last night on ESPN Radio, this is what you would have heard in the eighth inning of this game last night. The Braves, dramatic game, playoff, trying to win a playoff game. This is what you got instead on ESPN Radio.
Here at Dodger Stadium, we go to the eighth and a bunch of changes. Steven Souza Jr. will take over.
These days with the stuff I put in there.
Has that been updating? What do you mean?
Yeah, like when I put stuff in a stack, do you see it?
Oh, I haven't looked in a stack. What stack did you send it to?
I'm doing it right now. Yeah, I'm doing it.
I don't see anything in the RT.
I haven't done it yet.
All right, I'm going to get imaging ready just in case it decides to
have
some fun. I went through a whole computer update. I called IT, so I kept getting blue screen for absolutely no reason.
That sucks.
It was so annoying. Like, I was telling Jacob, I was like, literally, it gives me no warning.
Mm-hmm.
And I called the IT guy, and I've met with him a couple times already.
With a sack fly.
Who had a sack fly? What happened? You're trying to listen to the Braves. They were leading 5-2, top of the eighth. It was a carbon copy of the night before. 5-2 lead in the eighth inning. That's when they blow it. You're driving around last night, or you're at home listening on ESPN Radio. 5-2, eighth inning. Suddenly it switches over to two guys talking at their computers. And it was longer than that. I cut it short even more so than it was. Well, that went on for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, a couple of guys back at the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, hit the wrong buttons.
Whoops.
I actually had that happen once.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this was several years ago when Charleston Southern's games were carried on our sister station, WJNI.
Uh-huh.
And Chris Kelly was doing the play-by-play, and he texted me that somehow that during the breaks, they could, I guess the people listening online could hear the two of us talking back and forth.
Oh. Was anything inappropriately said?
No.
That's good.
And it's a Charleston Southern game.
Mm.
Yeah, so...
That's what
we were going to watch our mouths.
That's what I was thinking last night when it happened. Like, oh boy, these guys better not say anything. I'm sure they don't realize that they're going out over the air on ESPN Radio, and it's not like it's some local thing. That was the national broadcast. That's what everybody heard on ESPN Radio last night across the country. Like, these guys, someone's going to lose a job if they say something. They were complaining about their computers and IT, but nothing, no fireable offenses committed there. So hopefully you were listening on, I don't know if we even carried it on ESPN Radio here last night, but it was on our sister station, and I don't think they had any issues over there. Now the Braves are one win away. It's kind of, it's almost good versus evil, right? It's easy to root against the Dodgers, and then the Astros look like they're going to win the ALCS, as much as it pains me to say, and we're on our way. We're one step away on each side from the Braves and the Astros meeting in the World Series, and same idea. It's like good versus evil. How can you root against the Braves? I mean, come on. Maybe if this was the 90s, I would get it. But nowadays, I know they keep winning the division, but they haven't done much in the playoffs. And, they're not, like, obnoxious. They're not like the Dodgers throwing money around and bringing in Trevor Bauer, and then they go get Max Scherzer and all these other stars. And the Astros, because of what they did a couple of years ago, I could never pull for them. It pains me to see my team get beat by that team in the playoffs. So I hope the Braves knock off the Dodgers tonight, and then I hope they go and sweep the Astros if that's who they meet in the World Series. It's good versus evil. If you're not a Braves fan, but you're a baseball fan, it's easy to latch on to this Braves team here these next couple of weeks. I hope they finish off the Dodgers. And then, if it's Braves-Astros, I hope they hand it to Houston in the World Series as well. Let's go Braves. With that said, I'll still be rooting for my Red Sox tomorrow, but the writing may be on the wall in that series. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Sam is with us. Sam, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I had a couple of few words I want to say.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Excited
for your Braves win, huh?
I got to tell you, I am so happy.
Well, the series isn't over yet. Do you think the Braves finish it off tonight?
Well, I've been watching it last night, and I couldn't watch it. But I got to tell you, Dodgers, I got to tell you, they're a really tough ball club because when is the last time we went to the World Series?
99.
Well, it's not going to happen this year, Dodgers, but goodbye.
Yes, that's right. Get them out of here. I hope the Braves finish them off tonight.
World Series last year.
Oh.
Well, the Dodgers won the World Series, but for the Braves, it's been
since 99. What do you think about the CFC basketball games? What do you think about that?
Oh, you are excited for the Braves. Are you more excited about the Braves potentially going to the World Series or the College of Charleston basketball season starting?
How about both of them?
Yeah, how about? Good time. Good time to be a Sam sports fan right now. I think the College of Charleston is going to have a good season. I'm looking forward to it with first-year head coach Pat Kelsey. And that season starts in just a few weeks.
And practically a brand new team as well.
Yeah.
I think there's only like three guys from last year because of the transfer portal and everything.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, anytime you have a coaching change, you have that turnover. They start with four straight games at home on November 11th, and then UNC comes to town November 16th. That's the night to be there. See North Carolina play at the TD Arena on November 16th.
And CFC has beaten UNC two or three times in the past.
Yeah, that's right. Take that. That game is going to be on CBS Sports Network. It'll be a national game. So November 11th, we're just a couple of weeks away. Hard to believe. They start with South Carolina State. I think we'll see how year one goes because, like Joe just said, right, you have a lot of turnover on the roster. You have a new coaching staff. It could take a year or two to get things going when you have a new staff come in. But as I've said since day one, I think Pat Kelsey's going to do a really good job there. I think he'll pick up where Earl Grant left off. Again, maybe not immediately, but he'll get them back to where they were and maybe even better. I think he'll do really well. I think this is going to be a stepping stone for him. I can't tell you how long he's going to be here. He's all in College of Charleston. I'm not telling you he's going to be looking for a job tomorrow. Right? He's all in on the Cougars and the area, but I'm telling you that eventually this will lead to a much bigger job for him because I think he's a really good coach. And I think that was a great hire by the College of Charleston, and we'll see how they do in year one. But looking forward to finding out. Looking forward to watching along as the Citadel will get their season underway. Everybody will in the next couple of weeks. And from a little bit of afar, I'll be looking forward to seeing how the Cougars do this year. All right, coming up, we will get to Clemson. How important is this game now Saturday against Pittsburgh, and how many points will it take for the Tigers to actually win this one? It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, how important is Saturday's game for Clemson? Is it the biggest game of the year for the Tigers? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Been talking about the Braves this afternoon. Henry on Twitter said, "We'll gladly accept you and all Red Sox fans on our bandwagon." It's true. I am rooting for the Braves in the NL. And if the Red Sox have their season come to an end tomorrow or Saturday, I'll be rooting for the Braves in the World Series as well. As Henry said, the two stars last night were Smiley and Rosario. We need to end this thing tonight with Freed on the mound. Go Braves. Good versus evil indeed. Yeah, I think that is what it is. I don't know if I'd say David versus Goliath, but it is the Braves. All right, going up against the Dodgers. If you're just an average baseball fan or if your favorite team's no longer left in the playoffs, the Dodgers and the Astros are two teams that I think you root against the most as just a neutral observer. And so the Braves get the Dodgers now, and then you'll get the Astros most likely in the World Series. I won't count out the Red Sox just yet. Look, the Red Sox played great in back-to-back games. Then the bats went cold. The Astros' bats have been great the last two games. Who knows? Maybe they go cold. Baseball teams can be really streaky. You score 12 runs one night, you usually only score a couple the next. We'll see. There is the day off in between. The Red Sox did win three straight in Houston in 2018 against them. The Astros did have a 3-2 lead going back to Houston against the Nationals a couple years back and lost both games. So you never know what's going to happen. The Red Sox have their ace on the mound in Game 6, but they're obviously not in a good spot. The Astros are clearly favored at this point to win that series, leading and going home, which is what the Braves will be in, worst-case scenario. Now, as Henry said, finish it off tonight. Yeah, you have your ace on the mound, and you have a bullpen game for the Dodgers, which I'm not a fan of. The analytical crowd could tell me I'm wrong. I still prefer having Freed on the mound than going with a handful of arms. Finish it off tonight without even having to worry about going back home and extending this thing. Finish it off while you can. Go for the jugular, and then you can rest. Now, the Astros, they may end their series tomorrow. We could start the World Series. They'd probably begin it on Monday. I don't know what the World Series schedule looks like. Tuesday, maybe. Right, but the quicker you end this thing, obviously, the more rest you get. You could set up your pitching staff. You could have Freed come back early in the series. If he pitches tonight, you win the series. Game one of the World Series is, say, Monday or Tuesday. Right, you could have him pitch earlier in the series because he'll be more rested, although he probably is not pitching the rest of this series after tonight. But still, you know, you have him start back-to-back games potentially if you have enough time in between. You get your bullpen rested after that bullpen game yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, you're up 3-1. Just go and finish this thing tonight. Remove the drama. But Smiley and Rosario were the stars, and it's what I said in the open. That's the sign of good teams. Going into that game, was that what you were expecting? Like, hey, if I asked you to pick, who's going to play the biggest role tonight for the Braves, how many guesses would have taken to say, oh, I think Drew Smiley and Eddie Rosario are going to be the two stars? You're probably thinking Freddie Freeman or even, at this point, Jock Peterson. I mean, some of these other guys. Nope. Rosario with a big night. Smiley with a big night on the mound. That's what you need. Guys to step up, all 26 players on the roster doing their part. The other team doesn't know where it's going to come from, who's going to be the guy that beat us tonight. And the Braves are one game away from the World Series. Clemson has a very interesting game with Pittsburgh this weekend. I'll give you my tasty top five on the show tomorrow, but as a little teaser, if you look at the schedule this weekend, both in the NFL and college football, there are not a ton of appealing games on paper, at least. There'll always be some surprises, but on paper, not a lot of great matchups this weekend. I think Clemson at Pittsburgh is one of the best games of the weekend, to tip my cap a little bit here, to tip my hand before the tasty top five tomorrow. But it's also interesting, not only because I think it could be a good game, but just the role reversal. You have Pittsburgh who's ranked. Clemson is not. You have Pittsburgh who's favored. Clemson is the underdog. You have Pittsburgh who has a top 10 offense. Clemson has a bottom 15 offense. At the start of the season, if you outlined these resumes, if you gave me a blind resume, of course I would pick the current resume for Pittsburgh is Clemson. You tell me one of these teams is going to be ranked, one of these teams will also be favored, and that same team will have the much better offense. Oh, yeah, that's Clemson. And yet here we are, Clemson going to Pittsburgh as an underdog for the first time in 8 years against a ranked Pittsburgh team, against a Pittsburgh team that has a top five offense and a quarterback who's top 10 in passing yards. And if he plays well Saturday against Clemson, that could be his Heisman moment, and we could really start talking about Pickett as the Heisman. Now, he did a poor job. He really struggled last year against Clemson. They were able to sack him. They were all over him. They forced a couple of turnovers out of him. But this is a different year for Pittsburgh. They're playing much better. So, too, is he. And Clemson is not the same team. Defensively, they are, which is why this is also another interesting matchup. Because you wonder, how many points is it going to take for Clemson to win this game? They have not scored over 20 points against a Power 5 school. I think they'll have to score over 20. At least a little more than 20. I think Clemson's defense will be up to the test from Pittsburgh, but I do think Pittsburgh will be able to get some points. I don't think you're going to hold Pittsburgh to just 7 or 10. Right? I mean, even Syracuse was able to move the ball a little bit. Pittsburgh this year is averaging 531 yards of offense per game. They're averaging 48 points per game. Statistically, it's a top 5 offense in the country. And Clemson has a top 5 defense, so it's strength for strength. Something's going to have to give. But it may be too much to expect going on the road and holding a 48-point-per-game offense down to about 14. But can you get them to half? Can you cut that in half, get it to 24? And if you do, then you would need your offense to go for about 27. Can you score 27 points on the road? It seems to be asking a lot for Clemson. They haven't reached that number against a Power 5 team, and now you're going on the road, outdoors. Could be a little cool, could be a little cold here late October in Pittsburgh. Clemson has never played there. So it's a new experience for them. It's going to be a little unique. Outdoors at Pittsburgh, could be a little bit cooler. That track gets beat up between the Steelers and Pitt. That can be a tough turf as the year goes on. Can you get 27 points? Pittsburgh's more of an offensive team, even though they have a defensive head coach. It's not some elite defense, but Clemson's offense has really been scuffling. Second fewest yards per play in the ACC. Can you go get 24, 27 points on the road finally? Or is that too much to ask? That's what will be intriguing to me. I have no idea how many points will be required. The over-under in Vegas is set at 48. Pittsburgh averages 48 points per game themselves. So Vegas obviously thinks Clemson's defense will do a good enough job on Pittsburgh, or they would think that Pittsburgh would win, you know, something like 48-0, which is not going to happen. You know, but you'll hold Pittsburgh to about half of their average, and then Clemson would have to score somewhere around there as well. You're going to have to get about 24, 27, somewhere in the 20s for the first time to win this game on the road. If your defense can limit Pittsburgh's output, you know, cut it in half, which would be a job well done. Is this now the most important game for Clemson going up against number 23 Pittsburgh? You know, at the start of the year, of course, we thought it would be Georgia week one. And I guess it was in the sense that it set the tone. They scored only 3 points, lost to Georgia, and you saw like, okay, so this is what it's going to be like. The defense is really good. The offense is not. And then as we've moved along, they've played nothing but close games, Clemson has, and they haven't scored more than 20 points in 21 in that double overtime game in NC State, but that took two overtimes against a Power 5 school. And now they go up against Pittsburgh. But you also have Wake Forest later on in the season. And Wake Forest right now is ranked higher than Pittsburgh, and of course they're in your own division. So I think that would be the bigger game at this point on the Clemson schedule, assuming Wake Forest continues to play well and is still undefeated or in first place in the Atlantic Division by the time you face them. But for Clemson, you still have a shot, right? If you beat Wake Forest, I mean, you're in first place in the Atlantic Division, so that's still alive, assuming you beat Pittsburgh, right? You can't suffer really any more conference losses. But you're still just one game out of first place in the Atlantic Division trying to go compete for the ACC Conference Championship. And on top of it, they're also in your division. So that's a little bit more of guarding your castle than Pittsburgh in the Coastal Division, who this is the first time you're playing in their building since they joined the ACC for a reason. Because, you know, you don't get these games too often. But Wake Forest, you play every year. And Wake Forest is trying to come and steal your crown. So it's a very intriguing game Saturday. It's a huge game for Pittsburgh. As I said yesterday in the show, I think it's a big game for the ACC. The ACC has been asking, or at least the other teams have been hoping for a moment like this, getting Clemson while they're down. We've been hearing these excuses. Okay, well, now you got your wish. You got a vulnerable Clemson team. We keep hearing about what you could do if it wasn't for that darn Clemson team. Well, let's see Saturday. Pittsburgh, you have them coming to your building. You're favored. You have the better offense. You have the better quarterback right now. You're at home. Clemson's struggling. This is exactly what you've wanted. Can you win it? And for Wake Forest in a couple of weeks, same idea. Wake Forest, they have to go on the road to Memorial Stadium, but same idea. You've been waiting for this opportunity in this division of the ACC, waiting for Clemson to take a step back so you could take a step forward. Can you now go beat them to try to win the Atlantic Division? Those are the two biggest games left on Clemson's schedule, but I would say Wake Forest is a little bit bigger than this one on Saturday just because that's in your own division. That's guarding your, you know, that's guarding your home. Pittsburgh, they're over in the Coastal, and the Coastal's crazy every year, and there's not much you can do about the Coastal Division if you're Clemson. They're going to beat each other up. But in the Atlantic, now we've been the champs. We have dominated the Atlantic. Now Wake Forest thinks they could come into our building and knock us off on their way to winning the Atlantic. Not so fast, even if we're having a down year. That still remains the most important game, but Saturday against Pittsburgh is very interesting. Let's see how well that defense can do and if the offense can score enough to win that game. I think it's going to take the best offensive performance of the year for Clemson to win this. I think they're going to have to score more than 20 points. Going to have to get to about 24, 27 to win that game against Pittsburgh. And I'm not sure if that offense is able to do that. We'll see you on Saturday. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 1 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with Paul Charchian around 1:25 to talk fantasy football, help set your lineup for the weekend, and get ready for this weekend of NFL football. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734, to text the show, 843-608-1734. Somebody texted the show about Devin Ridder, the quarterback at, or is it Desmond Ridder, right? The quarterback at Cincinnati. And if the Panthers could draft him. Here's what's interesting about this year's quarterback draft class. It's not good. Pro Football Focus put out their mock draft already for next year, and they have the first quarterback coming off the board at 11. Washington Football Team drafting Malik Willis out of Liberty. And they only have three first-round quarterbacks. This is according to Pro Football Focus. Three first-round quarterbacks. Matt Corral is the second one. They have him going 20th. And then even Sam Howell going 28th at the end of the first round. But that's all. We have had a quarterback go number one in the draft four straight years. And it's been 8 years since no quarterback was taken in the top 10. But that may be the case this year. This is not a good quarterback class. And all the names we were counting on really aren't playing well. Matt Corral's the one guy that's kind of stepped up. Malik Willis has stepped up, but the last two games, he has six interceptions, and they lost as a 32-point favorite this past weekend. He hasn't been playing well the last couple of weeks for Liberty. And plus, no offense to the smaller schools, but if the number one quarterback is coming out of Liberty, that concerns me for this quarterback class. The last time no quarterback was drafted in the top 10 was 2013. E.J. Manuel was the first quarterback drafted. He went 16th. He was the only quarterback in the first round. That draft class had E.J. Manuel, Geno Smith, Mike Glennon, Matt Barkley, Ryan Nassib, Landry Jones, Tyler Wilson, B.J. Daniels, a couple of others, and a lot of ugliness. Terrible quarterback class. Could be the case this year. Not a lot of good quarterbacks to choose from. And by the way, they have the Panthers going with a lineman in the first round for Pro Football Focus. That would make sense. Hour two next. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.